Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to today's broadcast of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes, and I am the host of this show and also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network. We're so excited that you've joined us today here on this program. I want to encourage you to listen to some of our other programs that are out there, including host Lisa Goodman-Stone, as she hosts Parenting Aces, which is done Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock Central Standard Time. We also have American Tennis with Chuck Creasy, which comes on 11 o'clock Central Standard Time on Wednesday. Myself and then John Denise of the Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association does a show Thursday afternoon at 5:30 Central Time. And so excited that you've joined us today or listening in. You're one of the many people out there that does help our network continue to grow. Each and every week we're excited about the number of listens that we have on our podcast, and we're doing it in ways that people just didn't think could be done. This is a format that was unused. This was a format that didn't think could be done in the sport of tennis, and yet we continue to prove them wrong. We are in our fourth year, going on number five here shortly, and the numbers are just outstanding, and want to thank you all for listening into this program as well as the many others. We'd also encourage you to pass us along. Tell one of your tennis friends, a tennis fan out there about the UR Tennis Network, and perhaps we might pick up another listener or two. So thank you for that. We want to remind you that if you do listen to our programs and have an interest in broadcasting on our network, we'd encourage you to get in touch with me. And you can do that through the email at jhaynes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, at gmail.com. Again, that's jhaynes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, at gmail.com. We're always looking to add to our team. We believe that a team effort's important in tennis, and that's why we cover the areas that we do. But we leave a lot of areas uncovered and would love to have some more people join our network and continue on with our mission. So today, a little bit different. Normally I start off with the Division I rankings and who's moving up and who's moving down. We've got a lot of college dual matches that are going on. We've completed basically the indoor season. College coaches are ready to move out to the outdoors, which is where the real action begins. So I'm going to start off today with the Division II rankings. Now, I know this is a little bit different because we spend so much time focusing on the Division I's, but these other divisions don't put out as many rankings as the Division I's, so we're excited to offer you today the Division II and the Division III rankings. We'll start off with the Division II rankings. And number one, we have Armstrong State. And if you remember, we had Simon Earnshaw on the show before who left Armstrong State to coach at North Carolina State. So the team was taken over by Sean McCaffrey, who came from Wright State University, and he continues to dominate the Division II rankings with Armstrong State, and you'll see what I mean here shortly. And number two, we have Barry, 3 St. Leo, 4 BYU Hawaii. And remember, BYU Hawaii will in the future drop its program, so it's good to see them maintaining their strong presence in Division II. We have Lynn University, Hawaii Pacific, West Florida, Columbus State, Rollins at number 9, and Nova Southeastern at number 10. And Nova moved up from number 35 to number 10, so you can tell that they're having quite the successful season against other Division IIs. And looking forward to, at the end of the year, getting one of these coaches to come on and explain how it was done to win a national title. On the men's side, at number 1, we have West Florida, and we know that Coach Francine has been on the show before and is doing a great job over there with the West Florida men. Hawaii Pacific at number 2, Barry University 3, Concordia in New York number 4, Armstrong State, and again you can see where I say that they have that Division II dominant type program, not to mention these others. You can tell that Barry's doing a great job, Hawaii Pacific's doing a great job, and Lynn is doing a great job. There at number 6 would be Columbus State, 7, Lander, 8, St. Leo, 9, Lynn, and 10, Valdosta State. Now, that's the Division II rankings that are out currently. As many of you know, we cover all the divisions here. We don't just cover Division I. So excited to see some small college news come up because the small colleges are actually the driving force in the ITA. They represent the most number of schools playing college tennis. And these are the schools in which a lot of American players contribute to their teams. We don't see a tremendous amount of internationals at the Division III level. Division II does have its share of internationals trying to compete with each other. At the Division III rankings, you remember a couple of weeks ago, we had the men's national indoor tournament, and Trinity University was the winner there. They remain at the top at number 1, with Amherst at 2, Claremont Scripps at 3, Middlebury 4, Washington University at St. Louis at 5, Johns Hopkins, Kenyon, Case Western, and Chicago round out the top 10. Now, Division III, they just completed, and we're going to talk about that here in a little bit, their women's national indoor championships. And we had Johns Hopkins win that, followed by in number 2 at Emory, Williams at number 3, Amherst 4, Claremont Mudd Scripps 5, Bowdoin at 6, Carnegie Mellon at 7, Pomona Pitzer at 8, Chicago at 9, Washington University St. Louis at number 10. Now, as I mentioned, Johns Hopkins women won the ITA Division III Women's National Women's Team Indoor Championship. It's held annually each February. It began in 2009, and it's held for the 7th time in 2015. The event features 8 participating teams and is held over 3 days, beginning on Friday with the quarterfinals, followed by semifinals on Saturday and final on Sunday. Johns Hopkins made history on Sunday, becoming the first team ever to win 3 consecutive national women's team indoor championships as they defeated Carnegie Mellon. Carnegie Mellon, if you recall, ranked 7th in the Division III rankings. The Johns Hopkins Blue Jays remained perfect in final appearances with 3 wins and as many tries, while Carnegie Mellon, the Tartans, fell to 1-4 in finals, having lost the last 4 after winning the inaugural championship in 2009. So these teams are quite familiar with each other. They were helped in the weekend by sophomore Jody Law, who remained perfect, winning her 5th match of the weekend. All 3 of Law's matches secured the 5th point for the Blue Jays. Ms. Law said, "It felt really good about it. It makes me feel I was really important part of the team. Honestly, I think it was just there. I was just there in the lineup that caused it to happen. But I still feel pretty good about the finish it off for our team. It was a tight match, intense from the beginning of the doubles, with the Johns Hopkins drawing first blood there, winning 8-4 at second doubles. And then the first pair capped off his unblemished weekend with an 8-4 win to tie the match at one all. That's the Carnegie Mellon team. However, Carnegie Mellon led for most of the match in number three doubles and had three match points at 7-6. But the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays fended them off and took six of the last seven games to win 9-7. That put Johns Hopkins at a 2-1 advantage. Coach Dave Woodring of Johns Hopkins stated that all of the doubles teams are new this year. Quite honestly, I was talking to the Chicago coach prior to the tournament and said, I'm really not sure. We haven't seen any of these teams perform in competition in any states. I'm pretty happy that the doubles worked out. I would say so. He said, it was always great to win. There are a few years that we come back here when the tournament just started and we played people playing at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's great to come back and repeat. It's quite an honor. And in the third place match, Chicago bested Washington University of St. Louis 6-3 to take third for the third consecutive year. I wanted to get back to something that we had touched on before, and this concerns the ITA scoring format changes, and there have been several letters that have been written out there, and I'm not sure if you've heard about them, but I'm going to go through them today, just kind of discuss the scoring format, some of the things that went on that you may not be aware of, some of the ramrodding, the mandating that's been going on to force these Division I coaches to play a particular format that they're not too pleased with, that the players are not too pleased with. But everyone that has been involved with it is not too pleased with except the ITA. And I think that we're starting to understand just a little better where they're coming from and what's going on and how this should not, and I say this wholeheartedly, should not be affecting what's going on in college tennis, because this is only affecting a few tennis programs on there when you put the percentages into play. So I want to remind you that the ITA mandated an experimental ITA dual match format for all the NCAA Division I men's non-conference matches, all Division I women's non-conference matches played, and it was just recently finished, through February 17th for the men. The new scoring format will also be used in non-conference doubleheader matches unless both coaches agree otherwise. The dual meet will consist of three doubles matches played first worth a total of 1 point, followed by six singles matches, each individual match worth 1 point. 4 points are required to win the team match. Now, this is nothing new. We've been playing at Division I, we've been playing a seven-point format for years. There's nothing real new about the scoring system. However, the three doubles matches will consist of one set to six with no ad scoring and a tiebreaker at 5-all, which is completely different compared to the eight-game pro set that they had been playing. Once the team has won two doubles matches, the remaining doubles match shall not be completed. Now, this, in my opinion, is ludicrous because you can't finish a doubles match. I mean, there are lots of people out there that come to the sport to watch the doubles, and here you are not allowing that third doubles match to finish to save a few minutes off the dual match time. Not to mention the sense that it gives to players that they're not really out there competing for much anymore when their match is removed off the court while they're still playing. After the doubles, six singles will follow. Each singles match is 2 out of 3 sets, with each set using no ad scoring and a tiebreaker at 5-all in each set. So again, a traditionalist view is we play 6-game sets. Here we play 5-game sets for really first 1-5 so that you can get into the tiebreaker. All singles matches will be played to completion unless both coaches agree to do otherwise. And then finally, there will be no warm-up against opponents before the first point is played in doubles and singles. Players are expected to warm up on their own teams prior to the scheduled match time. Now that's the format change that was instituted in both Division One and Division One men's and women's tournaments and bowl matches. So in all of this, there was a letter that came out from Coach Bobby Bayless, and Bobby Bayless has spent a majority of his time at the Division One men's level, going from 1987 to 2013 at the University of Notre Dame, which is traditionally a top 25 program, and they are ranked highly again this year. And I want to let you know that some of this I talked about last week, but we're going to go through it this week so I can kind of set things up. In his letter, Coach Bayless said a couple of things. Keep understanding how and why we arrived at our current destination in regards to the change. Forces beyond the scope of college tennis and financial in nature are rapidly descending upon the world of college sports. And this is true, and we talked about this last week with Dale Hansen. The Power Five conferences are making a move to get more revenue into their football and basketball programs and also offer the athletes a different type of scholarship, an independent scholarship. Litigation, an amped-up arms race, and an out-of-control economic climate are creating a landscape that, by all responsible accounts, will change the face of college athletics forever. It is doing this. There is certainly not room in this discussion for the litany of factors creating this financial crisis. They include cost under the names of unionization, which we haven't heard about in quite a while, cost of attendance, financial profit from players' likenesses, which we've talked about, concussion study, additional nutritional supplements, and many more. And this is referring to the 15 antitrust lawsuits that are out there against the NCAA, not against tennis, but against sports in general. Revenue sports are going to get bigger and bigger pieces of the pie than before allocated. College athletic programs are headed for gigantic shortfalls of money, which is true. They already are in shortfalls of money, with only a minority of Division I programs able to make money off their athletic programs. A likely answer to this increasing call for more financial support for the revenue sports will be dropping non-revenue sports. So we don't have any knowledge that this is going to happen. I'm going to share with you some facts about this in just a little bit, because Coach Bayless does not quote any of the facts. This is all an opinionated letter. Legislation is being proposed to drop the required number of sports significantly. We have no evidence of this. And it goes to show you how the top dogs in Division I get more information than anybody else, because their athletic directors are the ones that would be driving this change. And we know that it comes from the avenue that they want to get more TV tennis on TV. And we talked about this. This is almost impossible to tell a dual match story when you are on TV. I mean, we got six singles matches going on at one time, then we got three doubles matches going on. It's hard for the cameras to tell the story. Now, he goes on to say, it has been confirmed and reconfirmed by a group of 12 college athletic directors and administrators from significant and diverse universities who met with the ITA board and operating committee in December at the ITA convention in Naples, Florida. We were advised that if we do not shorten our format and make it more friendly, that our sport will be likely led to the chopping block. They said that we've heard similar advice from the USTA and NCAA tennis committee. They've actively sought input from our membership. The process worked its way through town hall meetings and each ITA regional event, questionnaires, and straw votes at our convention and the NCAA championship, among other ways to seeking workable solutions. Naturally, some of our membership preferred the status quo and no change, but many of these coaches have not been the beneficiary of the advice and warnings passed our way. Again, that goes back to a separation of classes. You've got the Power Five conferences, which are going to operate in one way, and that's going to leave about 300 plus, 350 plus programs to operate according to these small percentages of people, a fifth of the country ruling Division I sports. So this prompted another letter. We'll talk about that letter in just a little bit, but before I do, I want to let you know these are some facts that pertain to the ITA's rhetoric. And there are two reasons that there are two main causes to these changes. The opposition to their proposed changes is harmful to the sport, and it should be the role of every head coach to simply accept the proposals made by a small committee, lacking proper process, and willingly ignoring what legitimate input it did receive. So here are the facts as we know it. The NCAA Tennis Committee has requested that the link to the tennis championship at the final site be addressed. Now, again, this is where the key comes in. The NCAA Tennis Committee has requested the link to the tennis championship at the final site be addressed. The 32-team format is extremely cumbersome to operate, and often first-round matches are started as late as 11 p.m. when delayed by weather or high competitive preceding matches. The ITA was asked to investigate modifying the championships at the final site to avoid the excessively long days early in the tournament. The ITA has proposed and forwarded to the NCAA on three occasions, 2012, fall of 2014, spring of 2015, dramatic format changes that have been repeatedly tabled by the NCAA for failing to properly include the stakeholders, coaches, and student athletes, for lack of their support amongst those stakeholders. The NCAA conducted an online survey of coaches and student athletes in the summer of 2014. The results, which were only recently produced, were overwhelmingly against dramatic format changes. And that's the format we've talked about. Over 80% of male and female student athletes are opposed, and over 70% of Division I women's coaches are opposed. And the ITA has never shared this survey publicly. Following the fall 2014, the NCAA tabling the proposal, the ITA created the Women's Scoring Format Committee with a representative from each conference. Three conference calls were held. No consensus was reached in any specific proposed change, and the ITA never shared those results. At the lightly attended ITA convention this past December, the ITA announced a 12-person athletic directors committee, and this is the committee that Robert Bayless talked about, had been created by the ITA during the fall 2014. This committee had handpicked ADs, retired ADs, and some other athletic administrators presented a report mirroring all previous ITA recommendations and justifications put forth in support of their dramatic proposals. When Division I coaches surveyed their own ADs, the existence of this ITA ADs committees was largely unknown to them. And this shows you that the ITA has been operating in secret from its constituency, putting forth its own format, its own controversy, by mandating that they do this. And this is what Coach Creasy famously says: the ITA really does nothing but make you pay $500 for membership to get you a scoring book. So while they're giving scoring books to over, well, let's just say, I don't know, 600, 700 tennis colleges and universities, they're not really doing much for them, but they are trying to do stuff for Division I scoring format changes. The ITA opted to conduct an unannounced vote of those present at the ITA convention. With a total of 34 D1 coaches present, the vote was 25-0-9 in support. The total of 34 present out of 500 Division I's and men's and women's coaches were included. Many of those voting were ITA committee members. This vote has been used by the ATA as justification that support exists for their proposals. Number 8 here in these facts, following the NCA tabling the ITA format changes on February 11th, the ITA has now instructed Division I programs that 2015 college tennis is to be played using different formats depending on conference rules. The NCAA tournament will be played using 2014 traditional format, yet the ITA has amended the new format for non-conference matches unless both coaches agree otherwise. Thus, athletes are now playing one set of rules in non-conference matches than they will others. And this goes to the comparison of, let's just say, football only playing three downs instead of four downs in their non-conference games to speed up the game. Same for baseball. You know, you play with, you get on base if you have three balls on Wednesday, and then you have Thursday, you get the four balls. So it's a very confusing kind of format. So what happened is Coach Jenny Hill Castillo, she responded to the open letter to Bobby Bayless. And she mentioned that he's a respected head coach, but his letters were filled with subjective reasoning as to why the proposed changes are needed. And what she did was is she presented some interesting points here that might offer a solution to this. And we'll see what you think. The NCAA request for a change to the 32-team finals has not been addressed by the ITA. Mirroring the baseball format of 4-team regional, a 2-team super regional match, and then 16 teams, 8-8 at the finals would satisfactorily address the NCAA's issue without any need to change the traditional scoring format. And it's a great proposal. Instead of trying to get all these teams at the NCAA championship, why not shorten the number of teams there and shorten the number of matches? You can follow the lead of baseball, like she says, have 4-team regionals, and then a 2-team super regional match. And then you've got your 8-8. The ITA has continually ignored, buried all opposing information to the proposal. To date, the NCAA has made the NCAA, and again I say that, the NCAA, which is the governing body of collegiate athletics, has made no statement that college tennis is in danger. The ITA needs to stick to facts, present factually supported arguments, and stop with the scare tactics and bullying of coaches in opposition. Another proposal is the ITA needs to conduct proper process where significant format changes are proposed. Sell your case, properly poll athletes, coaches, conferences, and propose one change at a time. Perhaps there might be support of some changes. And she's right. I think that, you know, having all these changes at one time really scares a lot of people, particularly the traditionalists out there. Men's and women's tennis do not have to play the same format. And this might solve a lot of the problems right there with over, as you mentioned earlier, or as I mentioned earlier, 70% of D1 women's coaches are opposed to the changes. There's already precedent for the different variations as men's tennis play lets while women don't. At the professional level, men play 3 out of 5 sets of the majors while the women play 2 out of 3. The ITA has received no NCAA mandate requiring both genders to play the same formats. Softball and baseball may be the same way. Those are some pretty interesting ideas that she's put forth. And Coach Bill Castillo is the head coach the women's coach at Long Beach State. I forgot to mention that. The last thing I want to present here, and this comes from Duke Tennis. This is Colette Lewis. Colette does a great job of covering all those things that are associated with junior tennis, junior and college tennis. And she lists out six reasons why she was disappointed in the Bobby Bayless letter. And I think that it is important that you hear both of these because they are in opposition and you probably don't get a lot of information about this. And Coach G says that Coach Bayless' letter is full of assumptions about the elimination of tennis and other non-revenue sports based on the reading of tea leaves as the new governing structure of the NCAA. Number two, relying on the input of 12 college athletic directors and administrators, input has never been released in any formal document. In a sport that has 325 schools sponsoring Division I tennis, is one obvious problem. The lack of reference to any input from prospective, current, or former student athletes is another. We've got to remember, this is about the player experience. This isn't about the fan experience, and that's what we're going with here. The other collegiate sports, they're not having to alter anything that they're doing, and yet tennis is being asked to mysteriously by the ITA to adopt new format changes, whereas the NCAA is giving no mandate from their end that the scoring changes need to change. Suggesting that people who don't agree with no ad or shortening the Douglas point just don't have the necessary information, need to be better informed. And this goes back to those Power Five. You know, they operate in autonomy, so they'll do and say whatever they need to try to get more and more people involved. But where in the world has 20% of the population ruled and told us all what's going on? And this is where 80% of the Division I schools are going to have to stand up. Number four, casting any disagreement with the changes is divisive. Opponents as villains attempting to thwart the ITA's heroic efforts, trying to save a sport by changing it so drastically that it's guaranteed to alienate many. But the ITA has gone down that path, and despite disagreement with or skepticism of its premises by many coaches and student athletes, the ITA continues to push a solution the majority do not want. Calling open and passionate debate on an issue dirty laundry and attempting to suppress it in the name of unanimity that doesn't exist. College tennis, Division I college tennis looks bad, but when the ITA takes such a radical and unyielding position without building a consensus of student athletes, coaches, and fans, there's bound to be fallout. And we're seeing a lot of that. And this hits on the last one. You know, I've said this before, where Division I college tennis believes they rule the roost. His consistent failure to distinguish between college tennis and Division I college tennis. Now, remember, there are more than 800 college tennis programs in the United States who are not looking for format scoring changes to keep them viable. And that's the small colleges. These are the ones that really contribute to college tennis. And I'll leave you with this today. And she wrote it well, too. It comes from Eric Buderak. And remember, Eric played college tennis at Division III Gustavus Adolphus College. In professional sports, we are entertainment, he said. We in doubles, we do our strictly because we are in the entertainment industry. That's why we changed the format, to get more fans, to get more singles players playing doubles along with their singles. But I don't think college tennis needs to be in the entertainment industry, unless they're doing it to generate income and massive fan bases or get a massive ESPN contract to help fund the programs. If that's the case, then let's make it more of an entertainment industry. But if it's not entertainment, let's focus on the competition and development of those players for the future. And Eric gets it because Eric played college tennis. So that about does it for me today. I didn't have a lot. I didn't have a guest. I apologize about that. On next week's show, we're going to have Craig Ward from Wachita Baptist, and we'll talk about his Division II program, and then we'll go from there. So I want to thank you for listening in this week and look forward to having you back next week. Thanks so much.